Chapter 154. At length, as the craft was cast to one side, and ran ranging along with the white whale's flank, he seemed strangely oblivious of its advance, as the whale sometimes will, and Ahab was fairly within the smoky mountain mist, which, thrown off from the whale's spout, curled round his great monadnock hump. He was even thus close to him, when, with body arched back, and both arms lengthwise high lifted to the poise, he darted his fierce iron, and his far fiercer curse into the hated whale. As both steel and curse sank to the socket, as if sucked into a morass, Moby Dick sideways writhed, spasmodically rolled his knife lank against the bow, and, without staving a hole in it, so suddenly canted the boat over, that had it not been for the elevated part of the gunwale to which he then clung, Ahab would once more have been tossed into the sea. As it was, three of the oarsmen who foreknew not the precise instant of the dart, and were therefore unprepared for its effects, these were flung out, but so fell, that, in an instant two of them clutched the gunwale again, and rising to its level on a combing wave, hurled themselves bodily inboard again, the third man helplessly dropping astern, but still afloat and swimming. Almost simultaneously, with a mighty volition of ungraduated, instantaneous swiftness, the white whale darted through the weltering sea. But when Ahab cried out to the steersman to take new turns with the line, and hold it so, and commanded the crew to turn round on their seats, and tow the boat up to the mark, the moment the treacherous line felt that double strain and tug, it snapped in the empty air. What breaks in me? Some sinew cracks. 'Tis whole again. Oars! Oars! Burst in upon him. Hearing the tremendous rush of the sea-crashing boat, the whale wheeled round to present his blank forehead at bay, but in that evolution, catching sight of the nearing black hull of the ship, seemingly seeing in it the source of all his persecutions, bethinking it may be a larger and nobler foe, of a sudden, he bore down upon its advancing prow, smiting his jaws amid fiery showers of foam. Ahab staggered. His hand smote his forehead. Grow blind, hands. Stretch out before me, that I may yet grope my way. Is night? The whale. The ship. Cried the cringing oarsman. Oars. Oars. Slope downwards to thy depths, O sea, that ere it be forever too late, Ahab may slide this last time upon his mark. I see. The ship. The ship. Dash on, my men. Will ye not save my ship? But as the oarsmen violently forced their boat through the sledge-hammering seas, the before whale-smitten bow ends of two planks burst through, and in an instant almost, the temporarily disabled boat lay nearly level with the waves, its half-waiting, splashing crew, trying hard to stop the gap, and bail out the pouring water. Meantime, for that one beholding instant, Tishtego's masthead hammer remained suspended in his hand, and the red flag, half wrapping him, as with a plaid, then streamed itself straight out from him, as his own forward flowing heart, while Starbuck and Stubb, standing upon the bowsprit beneath, caught sight of the down-coming monster, just as soon as he. The whale, the whale! Up helm, up helm! Oh, all ye sweet powers of air, now hug me close! Let not Starbuck die, if die he must, in a woman's fainting fit. Up helm, I say ye fools, the jaw! The jaw! Is this the end of all my bursting prayers, all my lifelong fidelities? Oh, Ahab, Ahab, lo, thy work! Steady! Helmsman, steady! Nay, nay! Up helm again! He turns to meet us. Oh, his unappeasable brow drives on towards one, whose duty tells him he cannot depart. My God, stand by me now. Stand not by me, but stand under me, whoever you are that will now help Stubb, for Stubb too, sticks here. I grin at thee, thou grinning whale. Whoever helped Stubb, or kept Stubb awake, but Stubb's own unwinking eye. And now poor Stubb goes to bed upon a mattress that is all too soft. Would it were stuffed with brushwood. I grin at thee, thou grinning whale. Look ye, sun, moon, and stars. I call ye assassins of as good a fellow as ever spouted up his ghost. For all that, I would yet ring glasses with thee, would ye but hand the cup. Oh, 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 thou grinning whale, but there'll be plenty of gulping soon. Why fly ye not, O Ahab? For me, off shoes and jacket to it, let Stubb die in his drawers. A most moldy and over-salted death, though. Cherries, cherries, cherries. Oh, flask, for one red cherry ere we die. Cherries? I only wish that we were where they grow. Oh, Stubb, I hope my poor mother's drawn my part payer this. If not, few coppers will now come to her, for the voyage is up. From the ship's bows, nearly all the seamen now hung inactive. Hammers, bits of plank, lances, and harpoons, mechanically retained in their hands, just as they had darted from their various employments. All their enchanted eyes intent upon the whale, which from side to side strangely vibrating his predestinating head, sent a broad band of overspreading semicircular foam before him as he rushed. Retribution, swift vengeance, eternal malice were in his whole aspect, and spite of all that mortal man could do, the solid white buttress of his forehead smote the ship's starboard bow, till men and timbers reeled. Some fell flat upon their faces. Like dislodged trucks, the heads of the harpooners aloft shook on their bull-like necks. Through the breach, they heard the waters pour, as mountain torrents down a flume. The ship. The hearse. The second hearse. Cried Ahab from the boat. Its wood could only be American. Diving beneath the settling ship, the whale ran quivering along its keel, but turning underwater, swiftly shot to the surface again, far off the other bow, but within a few yards of Ahab's boat, where, for a time, he lay quiescent. I turn my body from the sun. What ho, Tishtigo! Let me hear thy hammer. Oh! Ye three unsurrendered spires of mine, thou uncracked keel, and only God-bullied hull, thou firm deck, and haughty helm, and pole-pointed prow, death-glorious ship! Must ye then perish, and without me? Am I cut off from the last fond pride of meanest shipwrecked captains? Oh, lonely death on lonely life! Oh, now I feel my topmost greatness lies in my topmost grief! Ho, ho! From all your furthest bounds, pour ye now in, ye bold billows of my whole foregone life, and top this one piled comber of my death. Towards thee I roll, thou all-destroying but unconquering whale, to the last I grapple with thee, from hell's heart I stab at thee, for hate's sake I spit my last breath at thee. Sink all coffins and all hearses to one common pool. And since neither can be mine, let me then tow to pieces, while still chasing thee, though tied to thee, thou damned whale. Thus, I give up the spear. The harpoon was darted. The stricken whale flew forward. With igniting velocity the line ran through the grooves, ran foul. Ahab stooped to clear it. He did clear it. But the flying turn caught him round the neck, and voicelessly as Turkish mutes bowstring their victim, he was shot out of the boat, ere the crew knew he was gone. Next instant, the heavy ice splice in the rope's final end flew out of the stark empty tub, knocked down an oarsman, and smiting the sea, disappeared in its depths. For an instant, the transport's crew stood still, then turned. The ship? Great God, where is the ship? Soon they through dim, bewildering medium saw her sidelong fading phantom, as in the gaseous Fata Morgana, only the uppermost masts out of water, while fixed by infatuation, or fidelity, or fate, to their once lofty perches, the pagan harpooners still maintained their sinking lookouts on the sea. And now, concentric circles seized the lone boat itself, and all its crew, and each floating oar, and every lance pole, and spinning, animate and inanimate, all round and round in one vortex, carried the smallest chip of the Pequod out of sight. But as the last whelmings intermixingly poured themselves over the sunken head of the Indian at the mainmast, leaving a few inches of the erect spar yet visible, together with long streaming yards of the flag, which calmly undulated, with ironical coincidings, over the destroying billows they almost touched, At that instant, a red Armaday hammer hovered backwardly uplifted in the open air, in the act of nailing the flag faster, and yet faster to the subsiding spar. A skyhawk that tauntingly had followed the main truck downwards from its natural home among the stars, pecking at the flag, and incommoding Tishtigo there, this bird now chanced to intercept its broad fluttering wing between the hammer and the wood. And simultaneously feeling that ethereal thrill, the submerged savage beneath, in his death gasp, kept his hammer frozen there, and so the bird of heaven, with archangelic shrieks, and his imperial beak thrust upwards, and his whole captive form folded in the flag of Ahab, went down with his ship, which, like Satan, would not sink to hell till less he had dragged a living part of heaven along with her, and helmeted herself with it. Now small fowls flew screaming over the yet yawning gulf. A sullen white surf beat against its steep sides. Then all collapsed, and the great shroud of the sea rolled on as it rolled 5,000 years ago. Epilogue, and Ionium escaped alone to tell the job. The drama's done. Why then here does anyone step forth? Because one did survive the wreck. It so chanced, that after the Parsi's disappearance, I was he whom the fates ordained to take the place of Ahab's bowsman, when that bowsman assumed the vacant post, the same, who, when on the last day the three men were tossed from out of the rocking boat, was dropped astern. So, floating on the margin of the ensuing scene, and in full sight of it, when the half-spent suction of the sunk ship reached me, I was then, but slowly, drawn towards the closing vortex. When I reached it, it had subsided to a creamy pool. Round and round, then, and ever contracting towards the button-like black bubble at the axis of that slowly wheeling circle, like another action I did revolve. Till, gaining that vital center, the black bubble upward burst. And now, liberated by reason of its cunning spring, and, owing to its great buoyancy, rising with great force, the coffin life buoy shot lengthwise from the sea, fell over, and floated by my side. Buoyed up by that coffin, for almost one whole day and night, I floated on the soft and dirge-like mane. The unarming sharks, they glided by, as if with padlocks on their mouths. The savage sea hawks sailed with sheathed beaks. On the second day, a sail drew near, nearer, and picked me up at last. It was the devious cruising Rachel, that in her retracing search after her missing children, only found another orphan. End of this Project Gutenberg text of Moby Dick, by Herman Melville. MOBY1 by Gutenberg Edition.